CCTV.
Dad, a microscopic tag being planted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that. You will rule on that, mark my words, before your tenure is over.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence by the military-industrial complex.
I really do wonder sometimes what we're becoming in this country.
It's not left. It's not right. It's the state versus you. Alex Ansari, Outside the Box.
65 years ago to the day. And we're going to go into history today, friends. 65 years ago, on this day, December 7th, 1941, our nation was pushed into a day that would and still is remembered. A day where we will be talking about this afternoon, the birthplace, one of the primary birthplaces of the military-industrial complex. With me today is Mac White, webmaster of the website, MacWhite.com. Mac, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you, Alex?
I'm doing excellent. It's been a long time. We met first about a year ago, I think, and it feels like two or three.
That's right. It was just a year ago.
Right. And I want you to go ahead and tell my audience a little bit about yourself. I understand you're a cartoonist. You've done the work, the famous Operation Northwoods cartoon.
That's right. I'm a cartoonist. The Operation Northwoods comic strip is on my website, and it's one of the most heavily visited comic strips that I've got posted there because it covers in brief comic strip format not only the Operation Northwoods documents, which, you know, show the precedent there for our government staging false flag terrorism, but also gets a little bit into the precedents before and after, not only more recently September 11th, which to all appearances was a false flag operation, but also the Gulf of Tonkin during the Vietnam conflict, and all the way back to the destruction of the USS Maine, which started the Spanish-American War.
Mm-hmm. So government-sponsored terrorism is not a new concept at all in this nation.
No, and really it is the oldest trick in the book. It goes all the way back to ancient times, and the U.S. is no different than any other empire to use that technique to create an enemy, or to create a pretext for attacking a nation in the absence of a legitimate reason to do so.
Yeah, which brings me to my next point. All of this, the stuff that we've talked about and the things that people are about to hear today is not a new concept. A lot of it comes back down to the old game of problem, reaction, solution. On the topic of today, December 7th, 1941, I'm curious what your observations were. I know we talked about this briefly when we met, about the strange stories about that day, December 7th, and what was known about the attack before it took place. And, of course, those of you listening who know more about this are free to call in at 800-313-9443. But, Mac, I was curious about what your observations were on some things that did not add up.
Oh, so many things don't add up about Pearl Harbor. That where do you begin? That would be an even worse atrocity than September 11th. The familiar pattern is there. Prior knowledge, all these warnings from countries that were ignored by the U.S. government that the Japanese were going to attack Pearl Harbor.
I heard a date, Mac, that was 3 weeks. One of the dates that they got as a result of breaking the code.
Oh yeah, this is.
Okay, we'll pick up on that after the break. Okay, thanks, Mac. Stick around and give us a call, of course, at 1-800-313-9443. 65 years later, what have we learned about the military-industrial complex? We'll be right back.
Thank you.
attacks, Fuel Whispers of Conspiracy reads the headline from signonsandiego.com. It reads, historians agree that Imperial Japan, hoping to cripple United States forces in the Pacific, scored a major, although fatal, incomplete victory 65 years ago this week at Pearl Harbor. But there is a version of the tale that you won't find in textbooks. In this alternative history, December 7th, 1941, was also President Franklin Roosevelt's triumph. He had withheld information that would have warned the Pacific Fleet, willingly sacrificing a dozen ships and more than 2,400 Americans to achieve his goal. And as we know, FDR had dragged America into World War II. Now, how many different ways that FDR withheld information is beyond me. But there's one thing I've learned, and it's something about warfare. And we've learned a lot about war, haven't we, Mac?
Oh, yeah.
Since 9/11, and that it's not always for the benefit of the people, and they will use anything that they can and withhold information to make money.
Well, you know, yes, war is big business. And, you know, the thing that needs to be borne in mind about Pearl Harbor is this. Well, this morning in the local newspaper here in Austin, Texas, there was an editorial denouncing so-called conspiracy theories about Pearl Harbor. And, you know, they're not conspiracy theories. It's conspiracy fact, and it's documented. There's so much documentation that you hardly know where to start. There was a top-secret report of the Army Board that was released, or it was top-secret, but it was produced in 1944 and wasn't released until very recently, in which it was stated that everything was known about this impending attack on Pearl Harbor at least a week before it occurred. And this was in the State Department, the War Department, and the Navy Departments. They knew every detail of what the Japanese were about to do, down to the exact hour and date of the attack. And that's a quote from the Army Board report. And the other thing that's documented, that's essential to know, is that it wasn't just a matter of ignoring warnings. The Japanese were goaded into attacking. And the smoking gun for that is something called the McCollum Memo, which was issued by the Office of Naval Intelligence about a year before Pearl Harbor, in which all of these plans were laid down for how Japanese could be goaded into attacking. You know, oil embargoes and so forth to cause Japan to attack so that Roosevelt would have the opportunity to drag us into a foreign war, which he had promised he would not do.
Now, World War II bore the United Nations, which is, I don't want to put it at the center, but it is near the center. It is a prime chess piece in the construction of the New World Order, something we talk a lot about. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that and that part it played in World War II with getting this war going.
I believe that was the real motive for World War II, was to establish this military-industrial complex, but also the United Nations. They wanted to do that, to lay the groundwork for a one-world government in after World War I, but weren't successful in establishing the League of Nations, so they attempted again and succeeded some years later with World War II, after which the United Nations was founded. That was the real motive, and as bad as Hitler and the Third Reich were, they were really dupes in this plan. You know, you create an enemy that needs to be brought down in order to establish this new world empire.
Ah, so if we don't have an enemy to fight, then as the old saying goes, as we heard before, we have to manufacture one.
So much of the money that funded the rise of the Third Reich, for instance, was Rockefeller money. We all know about I.G. Farben and so forth. Well, and wasn't it Rockefeller land that was donated to build the United Nations on in New York?
Yes, it was. How interesting is that?
Yeah, and I mean, it's no coincidence.
So after World War II, I mean, we've seen what I've really noticed, and you wrote a really interesting article. If anyone out there hasn't read it, go ahead and go to Google and type in television and the hive mind. And I've talked a lot about this subject. It's the cornerstone of Outside the Box, how television is an instrument, really, of mind control. And we can look at how they use propaganda films, making the Japanese look like monkeys, depictions within cartoons, Mac, of them eating children. And ironically, this same propaganda was perpetrated on the other side of the globe as well, so it wasn't just like we were the only ones doing it. And that's sad to see, but this same behavior still continues to this day.
That's right. During World War II, Edward R. Murrow, the famed CBS correspondent, was involved in a study of Nazi propaganda techniques. And, you know, the Germans had television before we did, really, as far as being widely available. But they were studying these techniques in order to borrow ideas. And, you know, the power of television and of the broadcast media in general is just hard to really comprehend. People can see something in a movie or on television, and it's perceived on two levels. One, the conscious mind knows that it's a fictional movie presentation, for instance, but that primitive part of the brain, the reptile brain as it's sometimes called, actually believes what it's seeing. Otherwise, you wouldn't have an emotional reaction, you know, as down to your heart rate accelerating if you're watching a suspenseful scene in a film. And so what that means is that as a medium, it's extremely powerful because it goes directly to the unconscious mind. And so you add to that the fact that there is a hypnotic quality. This has been studied and verified many times. There is something hypnotic about the flickering of the television screen. You don't see it consciously, but you're drawn into it. It's hard not to look at a television screen if it's on. I think we've all had that experience. So it's essentially a hypnotic experience, and it creates reality. So you can put something on the news, and it might have been, you know, it's not necessarily what really happened. You can edit a film to make something seem a certain way. And even though there might be some conscious awareness that, yes, they have that capability and what you're seeing might not be what really happened, if it looks real, it is real to that primitive mind. And you add to that, you're watching the news and you're seeing these scenes played out there, the video of something going on in Iraq or whatever, and these have all been carefully chosen, carefully edited, censored. And at the same time, you've got the newscaster's voice, you know, talking with a certain intonation that seems to serve the same purpose as when a hypnotist is speaking in a rhythmic pattern as part of that induction process into a trance. So
yes, yes. And notice how calm they are, Mac, at least your average news reporter working for CNN, how calm they are when they report things that people should be jumping up in anger saying we have to stop. When you read about, for example, or see on the screen, the war in Lebanon, the war on Lebanon. And on the topic of subliminals, Mac, what you said is really key, because I think if someone's watching the TV and they're seeing blatant propaganda, disinformation, their mind could be going, this is a lie, I don't agree with this, or what Glenn Beck is saying, as we're going to get into in the next segment. And then they flip it off and they go about their business. but there still could be an imprint, an influence on their subconscious reptilian mind. Even if they don't agree with it, it's still stored like a computer with a trace of it left within the mind.
So that's right. We have never seen in history anything like this, where so many subliminal images that we are bombarded with, not just on a daily basis, but on an hourly basis, minute by minute. And the human brain's got to process all that. It's so much better to get your news, or at least part of it, by reading, because at least then the critical factors, facility of the brain comes more into play. You know, you're less critical when you're perceiving things on that purely unconscious, you know, reptile brain level. But you can analyze things, and so propaganda is less effective when it's in print, because the critical functions of the brain are working.
Right. And bombardment is exactly the word. I don't know what other word you can use. It's not like it's in short pieces. We're reading now about invasive advertising, the Minority Report style of advertising, where you can never run or hide from the ad. We're going to get into that when we come back with Mac White of MacWhite.com. Stick around. Spinning, as your mind is intended to do by watching hours and hours of network television. Mac, you're absolutely right. Reading is a totally different experience than watching the TV. When you watch the TV, you can go into this trance-like state of mind where you're kind of in between being awake and being asleep, but not in a meditative way, because it sounds kind of nice to be in that waking life state of mind. But doing this through this abnormal form of technology is not healthy. As opposed to reading, you're engaged in it, the wheels are turning, and the picture isn't being made for you, the sound isn't being generated. You know, I remember my grandfather and my grandmother, Mac, and my grandmother used to fall asleep all night long and listen to the radio without shutting it off, while my grandfather would watch the television, and he would leave that on. And I have met some people that are actually comfortable with just the TV being on. They've learned not to sleep without it. They have to have the TV on, that buzz, for some reason. And I found this to be really weird. Mac, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, there have been studies that show that people actually become addicted to television, and that there may even be a chemical basis for that, that, you know, watching television calms people down, releases the endorphins, those natural opiates in the body, and so forth. But all the while, they're being manipulated. And what's happening, you know, the essential difference there between getting your information from television and from reading is that on television, it's purely emotional. It's not very intellectual. The intellect, the cognitive abilities are not being engaged so much as our, you know, emotions. And they're manipulating emotions. That, you know, it's well known how Madison Avenue, the ad agencies, have got it down to a science, how they'll use, for instance, sex to sell products. And, well, this same science of manipulation through emotion is used to sell wars and to propagate fear. And this gets into the War of the Worlds radio broadcast of 1938, the infamous Orson Welles broadcast that caused a great panic. And what's even more interesting about that than the fact that, you know, this thing happened was that it may not have just happened. It might have been an intentional experiment on the American people. One thing is known for sure, that after the War of the Worlds broadcast occurred, there was a study of the effects of the broadcast that was conducted by Princeton University. It was called the Radio Research Project. And guess who funded that? The Rockefeller Foundation, which, by the way, I mentioned Edward R. Murrow earlier in his study of Nazi propaganda. Who funded that? The Rockefeller Foundation.
Now, I want to bring that up real quick, since you brought that up. Edward R. Murrow, the character behind Good Night and Good Luck. Did you see that film, by the way?
I haven't seen it.
Okay, it is a good film. And I had heard a lot of people try to compare people like us, patriots, to Edward R. Murrow. And I haven't really seen any criticism of him, but I did notice you pointed something about him out. And so could you go in further into some of the information about who this man was that maybe we don't know about Edward R. Murrow?
Well, I don't know that I have a lot of information that isn't already known about Edward R. Murrow. And, you know, as to, you know, who he was or why he personally was involved in this, he was, you know, brought into it to do this thing. He might not have known or understood the ultimate purpose of it. Mm-hmm. But what's essential is the Rockefeller connection, which, by the way, there was a very close Rockefeller connection with Orson Welles. And not to take away anything from, you know, Welles as an artist, a film director, whom I greatly admire, but it's interesting that the film Citizen Kane only got made due to intervention by Nelson Rockefeller. So the Rockefellers are all over the place. Those are the ones to really look at.
Are the Rockefellers involved with the latest Kramer outburst? I'm just kidding. I figured that would be the next one.
Yeah. You know, I have to wonder. But in that case, that's all I can do is wonder about it.
Hey, oh,
nothing will surprise me.
Let me say this, because I talked about this already, and I actually listened to your podcast last night that you just did, and I heard you talk about it briefly. But I'll just say this. In terms of Kramer, there's not a lot of network TV that I laugh at. There really isn't. I laughed at that. I actually liked that show.
Mm-hmm.
It's a show I could relate with. A lot of people can relate to it. And for a lot of people to see that, just with the fact that he's using that kind of language and that's this is who he is, was really disturbing for me to watch. Even though he's expressing free speech and he has a right to do that, it doesn't mean I'm going to like him anymore for what he said. And so that was sad in and of itself. But I find it weird how him and Mr. Mooney, Paul Mooney, the African-American comedian, who made his career like Chappelle off of excessive use of the N-word. And he and Kramer kind of teamed up, and, you know, it was like they were in an AA meeting, Mac, where they were confessing their sins to a priest. We are wrong. We've used excessive use of the N-word. It's causing damage to America. They should make a law saying
mm-hmm.
you can't. Actually, we got a break coming up. I'll let you respond to that when we come back at the end of the next break. And, of course, give us a call at 1-800-313-9443 and join the conversation today. We'll be right back. Now, what exactly happens, Mac, when a high-level Mason, 32 or 33-degree Mason, starts excessively using the N-word on stage, flipping out, turns around, right when his DVD, something he can make money off of, the Seinfeld episodes, all compiled there on DVD, while the sales on that are actually at the top, instead of plummeting, they're at the top. Besides that, they have hate crime legislation on the back burner, and then he and Paul Mooney step out of the shadows and blame us. It's kind of like the government with 9/11 trying to take away our civil liberties. It's all the freedom that caused this, when they, in fact, either caused the problem or didn't keep their own mouth in check. Very strange. And I wonder where this is going to go, Mac.
Yeah, it's always suspicious when something that seemingly random happens and it too neatly dovetails with some agenda that's out there. And as you mentioned, far from, killing Michael Richards' career, suddenly he's the talk of the nation, you know. And there's no such thing as bad publicity because there was all this concern at first, well, this is going to cause the Seinfeld DVD sales to go down. Actually, it's gone through the roof. It's just skyrocketing. And this happens at a time when this hate crimes legislation is, you know, trying to move forward. So you have to wonder, you know, it comes down to if you want people to go along with something, you got to create a crisis. If you want to limit free speech, well, create a crisis. Show people how the free speech, you know, is not such a good thing, and we need to have controls on it, which coincidentally or not, Newt Gingrich has been going around the past couple of weeks giving speeches about how we need to, you know, limit free speech. So, I'm very suspicious. It's, you know, I guess pure speculation. But, again, the guy is a 32nd-degree Mason. You got to wonder.
Yes, and my friend Freeman, who you met, in his video, and this happened long before the situation, it was last year when I met him and you at the same time, he was showing me a video of some information about Kramer, stuff he put in his corporate logos video about his visit to the temple, the Grand Lodge, and I found that to be very interesting at the time. But here's the thing, Mac, if this legislation passes, and I do need to note that this is Democrats involved in this as well, just like they're involved, some of them, with trying to push a draft. This is not just Republican or whatnot. It's a bipartisan agenda. But if it were to pass, do you think they're going to go after people like Fox or CNN? I personally, networks like that, people on those networks such as Bill O'Reilly, he would be at risk, I would think so. How about Sean Hannity? How about Ann Coulter?
Yeah, if we're going to talk hate speech, those would be more likely targets. But, of course, such a law would be enforced selectively. And who's going to decide what's hate speech? You know, this is another one of those laws that's put out there to made to be seen some benign thing that's going to keep us safe. It's this warm, fuzzy feeling we're supposed to get when we think about this law that's going to protect us. And in fact, it's just another situation of the wolf wearing sheep's clothing. We don't need any limitations on free speech. As ugly as some words may be, and as much as people's feelings may be hurt by them, or whatever, we can't afford to go down that slippery slope.
I agree. This next article that I'm about to read kind of ties in a lot of the concepts we've been talking today. It involves real hate. I mean, this is real hate talk radio, what I'm about to read from Glenn Beck. This ties in the whole mass mind control through network television and, of course, adds to the growing amount of propaganda using the new Jews, which are the Muslims and Americans, for that matter, as the excuse to take away our civil liberties. The headline reads, "Flirting with Fascism on CNN Headline News. Host Glenn Beck threatens Muslims with concentration camps." The New York Times profiling new CNN Headline News host Glenn Beck called him brash and opinionated with an unfiltered approach. The conservative talk radio host turned cable news announcer, the paper reported, quote, takes credit for saying what others are feeling but are afraid to say. He does talk about locking Muslims up in concentration camps, and this is a quote. "All of you Muslims who have sat on your friggin' hands the whole time and have not been marching in the streets and have not been saying, hey, you know what, there are good Muslims and bad Muslims. We need to be the first ones in the recruitment office lining up to shoot the bad Muslims in the head. I'm telling you," and by the way, those just tuning in, I'm quoting Glenn Beck of CNN Headline News. He says, quote, "I'm telling you with God as my witness, human beings are not strong enough, unfortunately, to restrain themselves from putting up razor wire and putting you on one side of it. When people become hungry, when people see that their way of life is on the edge of being over, they will put razor wire up, and just based on the way you look or just based on your religion, they will round you up. Is that wrong? Question mark. Oh my gosh, it is Nazi. World War II, wrong. But society has proved it time and time again. It will happen. Mackey went on George Norrie's Coast to Coast program exactly 3 weeks ago, where he noted that, and he said this many times before on TV, to end this war on terror, to be successful, we have to eliminate, eradicate, exterminate the entire Muslim population. Now, this is the epitome of hate speech. I think we're seeing metaphorical book burning going on every single day on every network, none excluded.
Yes, and, well, you know, he's advocating genocide. I mean, that is frightening. And this is considered mainstream commentary? Wow. How, man, have we really sunk low in this country that somebody's not doing something about him? Oh, there's people out here like us. We're talking about it, you know? But nobody's stopping
him.
Mac, and no.
I'm focused on the solutions. I think we can take it this direction for the rest of the program. Mac, I personally, between you and me and the rest of the audience, it's about the kids. We have another generation. They're about to start dying off here. The baby boomers are coming up on, they'll be seniors before you know it. We could be in a slave state by that point. Yet we have 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds that are indoctrinated not only by the television screen, but by the video games and the corporate world of music that crafts their world for them. How do you think things are going, Mac, with young people? Some people think they're waking up. Some people think this generation is what they call the indigo children. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They're all going to be the more progressive. But I wonder, because it seems the odds are against them in so many ways.
Well, it's really difficult to generalize about any generation. I've heard all sorts of generalizations about my generation, the baby boomers, and I don't fit into those categories, all of them, some of them. It's hard to say. I don't know, but I am encouraged so many times. Whenever I am just begin to despair that, these young people today, they don't know, you know, that they weren't here, they don't remember Vietnam, and now they're, you know, going off to this other war. Then I look around me. I'm always encountering young people, and it's mostly young people on the MySpace pages or wherever that are really much more aware than I was at their age. They have seen September 11th and have a better grasp of that whole problem-reaction-solution technique than I did. I saw so much when I was growing up, the Kennedy assassinations, King, the Vietnam War, but there were certain fundamental things that I didn't really begin to grasp, and a lot of people in my generation didn't until, you know, more recently. I didn't really start to really learn things until Waco happened. And so that's an effect that gives me some hope, is that I just encounter young people all the time who have an incredible amount of knowledge.
I agree. And actually, your response earlier about not wanting to generalize, I respect you for that, for the way you respond, because I guess it is easy, even myself, to break back into the box or into the matrix when we're trying to get outside the box and see people as individuals. And I've met a lot of people on MySpace, MySpace alone. MySpace is, to a lot of people outside of our circle, Matt, Mac, it's about dating or it's about the superficial. And it is for a lot of people. But there's our network. There's this almost subterranean underground network. And now you can't see the bulletins anymore. There are things that are being deliberately from the administration sabotaging in terms of the communication network on MySpace for those that are putting information out that's about 9/11 or about Bush or about the illegal war on terror. But I don't think MySpace or any restrictions or censorship at this stage is going to stop the momentum, the energy, the juggernaut of power and dissent that we've already created.
No, it's too big.
We'll find another way. We'll find another way if MySpace goes away. You know.
Yeah, you know, I'm very encouraged by the fact that the 9/11 Truth Movement, according to the most recent poll I heard about a couple of months ago, has accomplished one thing, very interesting, that one-third of the American population has very deep suspicions about the official story with regard to 9/11. One-third of this population is 100 million people. pretty big army.
That is a lot. But going back to what you're saying earlier about reading versus TV, you see, Mac, in some polls, it's actually 60% or 50%. And in terms of not trusting the government, it's at least 80 or 90 now. If you look on CNN, the Lou Dobbs poll there on CNN.com, through the roof. And you know what I attribute this to? Because I think we should recognize our successes, and we're doing that, but also see through our own BS and veil of trying to boost ourselves up where we're not. For example, a lot of people that vote that way are readers. They're on the internet for a reason. They read. To be on the internet, to read something, doesn't dumb down your brain like the TV. Now, it may not be healthy for you to be on the computer all the time, but people are reading. Their minds are engaged. With TV, it's a completely different medium experience. So it's really what I see sometimes is that the demographic, just to be realistic about polls and public opinion, the demographic is usually the thinking class. What I would call ahead of the curve, on the cutting edge, people that are reading and going through the editorials and going through the wires. With the headlines, you don't have that option at all.
Yeah, well, you know, you don't have to have a majority to stop tyranny. That's one lesson of history. I forget exactly what the exact percentage of the people, of the population it was that supported the American Revolution, but it was really... it was the minority, and we've seen that over and over and over again. The thinking people are the ones that matter. We're the ones that really keep things running. You know, it's interesting too that recently so many Hollywood celebrities have come out and expressed doubts about the official version of 9/11. Now, it's interesting, not because you could say, well, they're just Hollywood celebrities. That actually is important because it's a gauge that shows you that that must just be the tip of the iceberg. And if people are willing to come out, you know, in that realm of society, the entertainment industry, and risk their careers and so forth, then it shows you that so many more feel that way. And in fact, for those of us who follow this very closely, you know, there are insiders, government insiders, who have been whistleblowing all over the place about September 11th.
Why haven't people stood forward? Why haven't people come forth with information about 9/11 when, in fact, people have, haven't they?
That's the thing they always say about conspiracies. Oh, you know, such a big conspiracy would have required so many people to keep their mouths shut. Somebody would have talked about JFK. Somebody would have talked about 9/11. People are talking. It's just that the mainstream media doesn't focus on it.
Couldn't have said it better myself. On the subject of people coming forth about 9/11, Mac, looks like we have a couple of new people stepping forth. I think there's David Lynch.
That's right.
And I watched the interview this morning, and there's another person that actually the name has slipped my mind at the moment.
That's the actor James Brolin, who's married to Barbara Streisand. He came out in some television program. I think it's called The View.
Yes, The View.
And expressed similar doubts. It's interesting to me that that gets reported. I guess it does because it's much more easy for it to be minimized, you know. Well, that's just a kooky Hollywood star or the film director or something. But on the other hand, though, it's putting the information out there. It's planting that seed of doubt in the minds of people who maybe didn't already have doubts or didn't know. It's taken on balance is a good thing.
Yeah, I would say so. I started my show about almost 2 years ago to the week. And when I started doing the weekly series, that was Bam Bam Live TV, enveloping the whole cable area, network, receiving area for the Portland metro area about a year ago, when I started doing it on a weekly basis, or actually a little longer, a year and a half, I didn't get the emails that I thought I would get, Max, saying, you're an idiot. How could you even question the official story of 9/11. I was actually pretty surprised to see all the emails of people that already were familiar with the documentaries that I was talking about, with Loose Change and with the InfoWars documentaries and others and others and others. A lot of the audience was familiar with it. Some of people have been looking at it for 20, 30 years. And I've just discovered so many people in my own community that knew.
Yeah, that I've had the same experience. I don't really get that many emails every once in a while. But, I mean, not very often. Someone will write and say, you're crazy. and that's all they can say because you can't, dispute the facts. Most people, are supportive and they want to know more. It's like that character that was played by Donald Sutherland in the film JFK said, people are suckers for the truth. people want to know the truth deep down inside.
Do you think, Mac, that deep down inside they also really know the truth?
Well, that's it.
I've always thought that. Go ahead.
No, that's true.
Because I always thought that once they know the truth, right, Mac, and they're faced to look at it and they see that DVD, because you want to hand that DVD to someone. Oh, they've got to see this.
Mm-hmm.
But why do they resist, Mac? They do, don't they? Many resist because it's not going to hurt them. It's not going to burn their hand if they take the DVD. Their DVD player, even if it is propaganda and lies, it's not going to blow up. But they're going to look at that, and their paradigm is going to be smashed. So get those DVDs and get them out there to the sheeple that need to be woken up. We'll be right back with final thoughts from Mac White. This is not a battle to stay out of prison. This is not just a battle to keep your hands free from the handcuffs. This is not just a battle to keep food in your stomach, to get information out about what really happened on 9/11. Mac, this is just me speaking, but for some of us, this is really a battle for the soul. This is an exercise of the soul crying out from the darkness when we fight up against and we stand up against this tyranny, because so many out there are not and are asking us to give up, plug into the matrix, and follow in line. But I don't see any happiness, Mac, if we follow that line, if we follow the sheep, the Pied Piper, marching us over the cliff.
That's right. It is ultimately a spiritual battle, because the kind of a bondage that faces humanity, if we don't stop it now, is a slavery, the likes of which this world has never seen. It's a spiritual bondage, and it is very painful to face the truth. I meet people all the time. They don't want to hear any depressing talk. They don't want to look at the documentaries and so forth. And it's because, smashing that paradigm, as you were talking earlier, that is a very painful process. But ultimately, though, deep inside the human spirit, it's not satisfying to stick your head in the sand and to live with a lie. People need the truth because Jesus said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And set you free, that's the whole point here. It is a bondage. It is a slavery, the likes of which this world has never seen. And we have a window of opportunity now to stop it, but only by not being afraid to look at some unpleasant truths.
That's true, and you know what? Sometimes I think of this situation, Mac, with the end result in mind, not obsessing over whether we're going to win or lose, because there's a chance that we may have to go through things that we don't want to. But I think to start with what we want, what we envision in our mind, and shoot for that, and ignore the voices that say we're not going to win, that we can't stop the New World Order, or that it's already here. Now, I've said that, Mac. I'll be honest. I've talked about that and talked about all the darkness that's here and that's still coming. That is what this show is about. It's about talking about the darkness that's coming. But that's only at the rate, at the level, at the pace that we're at right now. The way things are going, those things will manifest. But I don't think it's ever too late for people to switch their paradigm and become a part of the solution. I don't think it's ever too late.
I agree. And we need to remember, too, that we're not alone. there is a higher power than the New World Order or the Skull and Bone Society or whatever, and that's God. God is on our side. There's a quote here, which I got to read, from Gandhi.
Okay, we're almost done, but go ahead.
Okay, when I despair, I remember that all through history, the ways of truth and love have always won. There have been tyrants and murderers, and for a time, they can seem invincible, but in the end, they always fall.
That was beautiful. I think we should read more of Gandhi's work on the air. Mac, thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you for inviting me.
I appreciate it. MacWhite.com. Check it out. And read, of course, in Google, television and the hive mind. Well, until tomorrow, Malik Sansa reminding you, there's a war for your mind. You can find the way out from within. See you then. Bye-bye.